This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. Reese, our content agent, wrote the copy based on our best practices, like mentioning Monday.com 3 times. That was the second. Johnny, our coordination agent, built the timeline and kept everyone aligned. Olivia, our human creative director, stayed in the loop because agents are great, but they don't always know when a joke lands. She had OneNote, tell listeners it only takes minutes to build an agent. So, minutes. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
If you're looking for new bands to follow this year, music writer Piet Levy has you covered. Piet's list of 5 Wisconsin bands to watch came out this week. We'll find out who made the cut in this week's Behind the Headlines. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Thanks so much for joining me today. In our first segment, we'll hear from news reporter Don Baim. Don is working on a story about the most recent change to the mental health care in Milwaukee County. The Milwaukee County Mental Health Complex is closing its long-term care ward. Here's Don and reporter Mary Louise Schumacher on what these changes mean for one local family.
Well, the planning started in 2012, and in 2013, Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abley actually set a goal of February 2016 for ending all long-term care of psychiatric patients at the county institution. It's known as the Mental Health Complex. And they will accomplish that goal 1 month early. That'll be done this year, and it'll involve the historic resettlement since 2013 of 150 long-term mental health patients at the institution. And
so these are people who are going from kind of an institutional setting into more kind of group home-like settings?
Yes. 15 years ago already, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that states had to provide care for those with disabilities in less restrictive settings. And Milwaukee County is actually one of the last in the nation, one of the last major population counties to move to complete that transition. And they are moving into group homes, apartments in some cases, if they don't need a lot of supervision. But many of these people from the long-term care units also have other disabilities, medical or developmental disabilities. And so they're moving into group homes with not only more supervision, but a lot of care, in some cases, one-on-one care.
Expand on that just a little bit. When you describe these disabilities, I mean, I know a mental health disability can mean a lot of different kinds of things. Tell us a little bit about who these people are and what sorts of disabilities would necessitate, you know, kind of permanent long-term care.
Well, I can tell you about one young man I met yesterday, Corey Wells, who moved out of one of the long-term care units in 2013. He was one of the first to move out into the community. He's now living in a group home in South Milwaukee. But Corey has several mental health problems, and the primary one really causes him to misbehave, I think I could say generally. And so to control that behavior, and he misbehaves when he's seeking attention or seeking activity. And so throughout his adolescence and young adulthood, it would cause problems at home and later cause problems in unstructured group homes. And he was bouncing in and out of the county institution. And so at the county institution, when he finally moved there to stay several years ago, they didn't have the staff to give him all the activities and all the attention he needed. And so there were always behavioral problems. Mm-hmm. And so he became increasingly medicated by county staff to control him, or he was restrained to control him because he wanted to be active and he wanted to be doing things or going places. And those behavioral problems are one of his major mental illnesses. He also has some others that don't impact him, like physically or in interactions with people. But Corey today, after getting out of the institution just a few years ago, is no longer heavily medicated, no longer needs restraints. I met him at the group home with his family yesterday. He was playing video games. He loves to play cards. As long as you include poker chips in every card game, even Crazy Eights. And he was showing me some new kind of revised poker games that he plays there with the staff. He loves to go shopping, whether it's Walmart or Goodwill. He even walks around the neighborhood at Halloween. And according to the staff I met there, he has some friends in the neighborhood. People, you know, have welcomed this group home into their South Milwaukee neighborhood. And people know Corey. Mm-hmm. And because of the availability of all this activity and all this attention, you don't see the behavioral problems anymore. But he does need that intense interaction. And his father, you know, talked about finding Corey in the institution, kind of drooling and sleeping all the time. And now his old personality has reemerged, and his father describes it as night and day. You know, this is the old Corey, mm-hmm. is what his mother said.
That story will appear in Monday's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Pick up a copy to learn more or head to jsonline.com for the latest.
Get the magic.
Every year, music writer Piet Levy creates a list of local bands to watch. Last year's picks went on to big record deals, tours with big-name bands, and shows at South by Southwest. How does Piet select musicians for this list, and who made the cut this year? Here he is with the answer.
Tell me a little bit about the bands you picked for this year's bands to watch.
We'll be seeing Ishtar there, and he's at the top of our list. He's a rapper from Milwaukee, just 19 years old, and in 2015 he had 2.5 million streams on SoundCloud alone for music for his mixtape Old Soul Young Spirit, which included work from a Grammy-nominated producer who's worked with Drake. He also got over 1 million streams for one song alone called Too Bad on Spotify. And he had a song called Sugar that came out, wasn't part of the mixtape, it came out later, but it's such a good song that the curators at Apple Music put it on their best of hip hop list at the end of the year. It has nothing to do with metrics. This is strictly songs that the kind of the tastemakers at Apple just wanted on this playlist. And Sugar was on there along with like songs by Kendrick Lamar, by Nicki Minaj, by Fetty Wap. And then there's Ishtar from Milwaukee. Andy and Alex, who are identical twin sisters from Pulaski. Their parents met in a country band and they've been singing all their life. And on a whim, they decided to audition for The Voice at an open casting call and advanced through all these different audition rounds before they can get to the show. And when they performed, they were kind of picked as like an early fan favorite. They had this really beautiful version of Dido's Thank You. And all four celebrity judges, you know, Adam Levine, Gwen Stefani, Pharrell Williams, and Blake Shelton, they all turned their red chairs and tried to get them onto their team. And they ended up going with Adam Levine. They got some mentorship tips from him, from John Fogerty, from Rihanna. Their audition video, besides being seen by millions of people that watching at home, was seen on YouTube, 4 million times and rose up pretty high on the iTunes charts. So they did really well, and to the point that they played the Meyer Theater in Green Bay, their hometown, in January, and it's a 1,000-seat venue, and they're able to sell the place out. Tenements, a punk band, has been around actually for 10 years. But this last year, Predatory Headlights was an album that they released, an incredibly ambitious double album. And it goes from punk to pop to country to there's elements of classical music, experimental music. It's got some jazz influences. It's just a really bold, ambitious, stunning record. And to the point that the music critic of the New York Times, Ben Ratliff, sang its praises, compared it to Rolling Stones' classic album Exile on Main Street, and put it on his top 10 list at the end of the year for best albums of 2015. Yeah, the other artists that we had on our bands to watch list include Webster X, who's another rapper from Milwaukee. It's the first time we've had two rappers on this list in 1 year, but he absolutely deserves it. He has a really interesting style that's not really like any other rapper I've ever heard before in Milwaukee or beyond Milwaukee. It's got this combination of this very kind of intense flow with a very kind of meditative, almost dreamlike, spacey kind of production. It's just a really interesting contrast that makes it really appealing. And his live show is the same kind of thing. He has this magnetism to him. He is also very particular about the songs he releases. So he hasn't released a ton of stuff, but what he has released has gotten a lot of attention. Two songs in particular, Doomsday and Lately, you know, not only are they really interesting songs, very different, they were done with really interesting visual treatments that were just very cinematic and just shot by local filmmakers in Wisconsin, but just really beautifully done to the point that, you know, they got a lot of national media attention. And Complex Music, which is a leading music site, they put Webster X on their artist to watch list in the whole country. They think he deserved a spot on there. And then we've also got Reyna, which is a brand new band that we actually introduced. Their identity was secret before our story, but they were previously known as Vic and Gab, which is one of the most popular bands in Milwaukee. They opened for President Obama at a Milwaukee rally. They toured all over the country, did South by Southwest. They're in heavy rotation on Radio Milwaukee. You know, a couple years ago, they were playing pretty much, it felt like, every single day in town. They were just incredibly popular. And they decided to rebrand. They've teamed up with Psycho Management, which is the same agency that used to overlook Lorde. And, you know, with their help, they've kind of worked with some interesting producers, including the co-songwriter of Home, which is a massive hit for Philip Phillips. He's been kind of guiding them, and they've redeveloped their sound. So they've gone from kind of this pop rock sound to this much more ambitious, slick, intense kind of synth pop sound. And they've changed their identity too as Reyna. So they've released one song so far called Spill Your Colors, but it's a very good song. It's probably the best thing they've ever done. And there's more where that came from. So definitely want to watch, too.
And how did you go about picking these bands?
So, I mean, all year long, I'm kind of thinking about this list. Who's going to be on this list? Who will make the cut? And Webster X, I mean, I knew pretty much in January, last year that, I have to have him on this list because he released this video for Doomsday and Entertainment Weekly picked it up. And it was just such an interesting video. And he's already a very interesting artist, but it clearly that was the very first sign that what he was doing in Milwaukee, he had a very strong kind of cult-like fan base actually in Milwaukee. It was starting to grow beyond. So I knew he had to be on this list. And Ishtar, once his mixtape blew up a couple months later, he was also a no-brainer. So those two very early on I knew had to be on there. Tenement, their album came out in June, and, you know, it just kind of picked up steam over the summer. And it's still not an album that's like a bestseller by any means, but, for a punk band just kind of in Wisconsin, that's not really, you know, they're not into the whole, you know, hype machine kind of thing. They just kind of make their music and put it out there, and they just, you know, let people enjoy it if they want to enjoy it. They're not doing tons of press and stuff, but that album just deserved the press, and it deserved, I think, because it was so good, they deserved a spot on our list. With Reyna, too, I mean, Vic and Gab just showed such skill and determination. I mean, they're just really not only just good songwriters and good performers, but they're incredibly savvy about the industry, and they're hardworking. And, you know, the sisters in Vic and Gab who are now in Reyna, you know, they're in it to, like, make this their lives. And, you know, they have a lot of ambition and determination. And just that, what they accomplished in Vic and Gab was so impressive that, you know, once I heard this new song from Reyna last fall, I knew that had to be on the list too, because the song was heads above anything they'd accomplished previously. And now they have this management agency supporting them. And with Andy and Alex, I mean, they were so impressive on The Voice. I mean, you know, there's contestants from Wisconsin who pop up on like Idol and The Voice almost every year, and they're fine. They kind of, you know, they show up and they sing a song and they're good, but then they kind of fizzle out. And a lot of reality show contestants kind of come and go. But Annie and Alex do display a very interesting talent. The fact that they're identical twin sisters is really interesting, too. And the way they're able to kind of harmonize and perform off of each other and with each other, it is a special thing to see.
If you want to find out more about this year's bands to watch, head to tapmilwaukee.com. We've got the full list, including videos, performances, and more, available there. The Journal Sentinel is also pairing up with Radio Milwaukee to throw a concert with Ishtar, Andy and Alex, and Tenement. It's a free show with some of the hottest acts in town. For details on how to attend, visit Tap Milwaukee on Facebook. Approximately 13% of the population in Barron, Wisconsin is Somali. The Somali immigrants fled civil war and extreme poverty, settling instead into life in small-town Wisconsin. That includes jobs in meat processing plants and the like. One issue has come up for these immigrants and their employers. Mary Louise Schumacher talked to reporter Rick Barrett about this story.
Some Somali Muslims have been basically asked not to take prayer breaks at Aaron's company. And so tell us a little bit about that. Bring us up to speed with the news that's related to your Sunday story first.
Well, what's happened here at Aaron's company over the summertime, they hired a group of about 50 Somali Muslim employees. And these particular employees have been described as very good workers. They're very well respected. They're very well liked. There's been one issue, though, and that issue is, according to their religious practices, they strongly believe that they should be taking two prayer breaks on the second shift, which is the afternoon shift. And those prayer breaks should be done at a particular time. For the manufacturer, it's become a problem because they allow those people on the second shift and on the first shift too to have two 10-minute breaks. And that applies to everyone. If they allow these Somali Muslims to have special prayer breaks, it can disrupt production and essentially shut down an assembly line.
Because why? They're all taking breaks at the same time? Or, I mean, this has been a practice that's been going on for quite some time at Aaron's, correct?
What's changed? There are a couple of things. Aaron's company has had Muslim employees for years. They've not, however, been on specific assembly teams. There have been a few individuals here and there within the manufacturing plant. And the company pretty much said, okay, you can take prayer breaks when you need to. We respect that, and we're going to let it happen. However, with 53 people now on the assembly line, what happens is even if you take one person off an assembly cell, they call it, that particular unit has to shut down while that person is gone. So, for example, you could have 10 people on an assembly team.
And they're making, we should probably say, by the way, lawnmowers and snowblowers and things like that, correct?
Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, right now they're kind of in a mix of snowblowers, and then they're also gearing up for the lawn and garden season. Mm-hmm. So you've got an assembly team of maybe 10 people. Mm-hmm. If one person steps away, then those other 9 people have to stop work until the other person gets back. And so that's kind of where the issue is at. You've got 53 people in a manufacturing plant setting, and it's difficult for the company.
Company is saying it's a very pragmatic workflow issue. What are the Somali Muslims saying? Do they feel that there is some discrimination here? What are they claiming?
They're claiming a little bit of that. They feel as if they're being picked on. And the reason why is they say if someone wants to get up and walk away to the bathroom for a few minutes— they can do that, and there's not necessarily a shutdown. And so they say, why can't we take a few minutes to go off on a prayer break? And it's not going to be that disruptive to production.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Rick, these news stories erupted this week, and you've been chasing the news part of the story. And so for the story you're working on now, you're kind of stepping back and trying to provide a broader context, right? So tell us a little bit about what's motivating your Sunday story and what it's about.
Yeah, that's exactly it. What I wanted to do was step away from the controversy a bit and just kind of figure out, you know, who are the Somalis who've come here and tell their story a little bit better.
Rick's story appeared in the Sunday edition of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. If you're looking for a copy of it online, visit jsonline.com. As editor Greg Borowski said in this week's JS on Politics show, it's back to the future in this year's U.S. Senate race between Ron Johnson and Russ Feingold. Reporter Bill Glauber, who you've heard before on this show, joined Greg to talk about this contentious race.
Let's start with what's kind of a obscure topic maybe to some, but this ad in the Green Bay Press Gazette the other day attacking Russ Feingold.
There was an overprescription of medication at the Tomah VA Center that resulted in deaths and investigations, and it was who knew what when, and it's really affected 3 U.S. senators. Russ Feingold, who was alleged to have received a handwritten complaint on this as early as 2009, his office says he never received that letter from a union official, and the union official I talked to yesterday said she had assumed it was delivered, but it wasn't. You've got Senator Johnson's office, which didn't pass along apparently a whistleblower's information to a Senate subcommittee, that in 2014. And then you have Tammy Baldwin, the senator, whose office apparently didn't make public an inspector general's report on the TOMA VA. So a third-party group has attacked Russ Feingold in this ad. Feingold denies that he ever received this handwritten letter. There it sits. It's one of those. There's going to be everything in this campaign. Yeah,
well, do you think something like that is effective? Is it just we had to just explain all that? Does the average person picking up an ad like that go, oh, yeah, I know all that, and they understand why that attack is coming? Or is it, I mean, what do you think? Is things like that work?
I don't know if things like that work. This is maybe a softening up. Maybe they go with it again, try to make more hay out of it. But somehow I don't think this race is going to turn on the TOMA VA.
Right. Well, let's talk about the race in a little more general terms. So it's kind of rare to have a rematch. And these guys had a very contentious race the last time. Talk a little bit about how, I mean, them and their staffs, do you think they even get along or not get along, or how contentious are we looking for this?
I don't even think these guys could agree on where to order lunch and what to order. I mean, they disagree about every single issue. It is a clear left-right race. And the other thing about this race, at the end of the 2012 race, it was apparent when you were in the room with these two men that they didn't really like one another by the end of that race. The body language suggested that. So 6 years later, you have this rematch. Charles Franklin of Marquette University says rematches are inevitably negative affairs, and you have a lot of outside spending that's going to come into this race, and what outside spending means is negative ads. So yeah. It is going to be quite a race.
Yeah, well, why is that? Talk about for these outside groups in both parties, why is it such an important race? This is a first-term senator, so it's the best opportunity to beat a senator, probably, but why else is it so?
Well, there's a couple of things. First-term senator, a rematch with a former senator, so you have two guys with high profiles, although a third of the public can't make a determination about Johnson because they don't really know who he is. You have the Democrats trying to flip the Senate, the Republicans defending the Senate. You have a presidential battleground state that has not been won by the Republicans since 1984 with Ronald Reagan. Now, the headwinds would suggest they're against Johnson since this is a Democratic state in presidential elections. If you go by the last two, it would be tough. However, in 2000 and 2004, those were close races here, so that could give Johnson, an idea that he could take this race from Feingold.
Other segments in this week's JS on Politics show include a preview of the Iowa caucuses, including a look at the race between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. You can find the full replay of that show online at jsonline.com. It's also available as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Now that the Packers' playoffs hopes are unfortunately dashed, the team is turning its attention to the offseason. One of the biggest ways the Packers can tweak their performance comes in the form of their free agents. I caught up with Packers beat reporter Michael Cullen for more.
Now the Packers have 18 free agents. What are some of the biggest decisions Green Bay will need to make in regards to those free agents?
Yeah, the biggest choices they're going to have to make are probably on the defensive side of the ball. When you look at that portion of this team, they've got a number of players who are either starters or key rotation players that are free agents this season. And that includes the likes of Casey Hayward, one of their top cornerbacks, Mike Neal and Nick Perry, two of their contributors at outside linebacker. Then you look at a guy along the defensive line like LaTroy Guyon, who has played big minutes for them in certain spots this year. And then, of course, B.J. Raji, who is one of the biggest names, a starting nose tackle for this team that was on a one-year contract. He's a free agent now. And so they've got a number of decisions to make at all three levels of the defense, whether it's along the defensive line, in the linebacking unit, or in the back end of the defense in the secondary. So that's where a big portion of the attention for general manager Ted Thompson is going to have to turn in the next weeks and months.
And what do you think are the smartest moves they could make in order to most improve the defensive line?
Boy, that's a really good question. You know, Raji is a guy who was on a one-year contract simply because he was coming off a really devastating injury. He had suffered a torn biceps last year that cost him the entire season, and so they put him on a one-year deal just because you don't really know what you're going to get from a guy after that. But he played fairly well this season. He played in just about every game and showed that he could get back to some of his form from years past. So I would think that they're going to try and make an effort to maybe bring him back. You know, he's a guy that could be on the edge for them, yes or no. Same thing with outside linebacker Mike Neal. Neal is a guy who played pretty well at times this season, didn't have maybe the statistical contributions that he would have liked, but Neal was very happy with his overall level of play. Those two guys are probably some of the biggest concerns up front for the Packers, and two guys that they'll think very, very hard about before deciding whether to offer and then how much money to offer.
And what other steps do you think the Packers could take in order to improve in the offseason?
Well, the draft is definitely going to be a big priority for them this season, as it is every year. You know, General Manager Ted Thompson and his personnel office really love the draft. They love to evaluate players and sort of find either young players or undrafted free agents that they can bring in and contribute right away. But they have some legitimate areas of need that they need to target in the draft this season. They need to look long and hard at the inside linebacker position. They need to look long and hard at the tight end position. And they might even consider bringing in some more speed at the receiver position. So there's a number of areas that they're going to look at, and they're going to have to consider a lot of players there depending on where they fall in the draft and where they prioritize those needs in the draft. But those three areas, receiver, inside linebacker, and tight end, are three areas that I expect to be targeted, whether it's in the draft or with some undrafted free agents after that. But those are the three areas I think fans can look for, especially in the next few months.
And unfortunately, certain players were plagued by illnesses, most notably Jordy Nelson. Who can we expect to see back on the field next year, and how do you think that'll change the game?
Well, Jordy Nelson is obviously the biggest player that they'll gain back to the field. Jordy suffered a torn ACL in the exhibition season and missed the entire year. All reports indicate that he's ahead of schedule and will be back to normal, if not better than he used to be, with that strengthened knee. And how will he change the game? It's going to be huge for the offense. You know, you saw the receivers struggle. You saw a lack of chemistry at times between quarterback Aaron Rodgers and his receivers, because without Jordy, it was just such a major loss in terms of production, in terms of what he opened up for other players in different scheme. And he's just a terrific locker room guy that when you can have him both on the field and in your meeting rooms, it'll be big for them. So that's obviously the biggest player that they'll gain back without question.
And then this was your first season covering the Packers. What was your greatest takeaway?
You know, I think the thing that I appreciated the most that was a little bit difficult to discern when I was living in other places was just how passionate the fans are, you know, for this team.
Of course, you can keep up with our Packers off-season coverage online at jsonline.com/Packers. And that's it for this week's show. Katie O'Connell signing off here. Thanks so much for listening, and join me next week for more.